You're listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amswell.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. I'm your host, Haley Shanley, alongside my co-host, Matt Skubick. And we'd like to remind you to head on over to amsoil.com. And when you spend $50 or more and you use promo code FREESHIPSNOWX at checkout, you're going to get yourself free shipping. Now, we're kicking off this all-new podcast in a big way. So let's welcome to the pod off-road legend, Scott Douglas. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's a fantastic day out here.
Where in the world are you at now? Now, you're not in Southern California anymore, are you?
Well, I still have a place in Southern California, but I also have a place in a little town called Mountain Home, Arkansas. And it's about 2.5 hours from Branson, Missouri. And it's up in the Ozark Mountains. It's beautiful here.
Now, we were chatting at the end of the off-road season in Crandon, but refresh my memory and tell the fans what brings you to Arkansas.
Well, it's quite an interesting story, but in a nutshell, I end up meeting my high school sweetheart about 5 years ago, and we started dating again, and then we actually got married a year ago. Yeah, no, it's been neat, and so she's here, and she was from here. We met in Southern California, and then she had moved back. She was originally from Arkansas, and she had moved back here. And anyway, so she kind of, I was visiting her and kind of fell in love with, I knew nothing about Arkansas, and I kind of fell in love with the area and obviously fell in love with her. And so that's what brought me here.
Now, let's talk about what's been keeping you busy since you officially retired from short course off-road racing back in September. I understand you've been putting some miles on the Jeep.
Absolutely, yes. I've got a Jeep LJ, and Rusty's has outfitted it with all kinds of stuff. Rusty's Off-Road and Amsoil supports me, but I've been doing a lot of different Jeeping events, and the last one I was at was KOH. Before all this craziness hit, and we did some stuff out there, and that was kind of neat. And we're looking forward to doing quite a few this year, as well as other shows I do. I do different displays for Amsoil. And so sometimes I'll go to car shows. Sometimes I'll go to, motorcycle shows, example, like Sturgis. I'll set up a big display there for them, and then they fly corporate in and they handle the display. And then, or Hot August Nights, which is in Reno, Nevada, at the big car show. So I get to kind of tour around a lot. It's, you know, everybody goes, why do you want to go setting those awnings up and do all that hard work and everything? I says, I just love being around people and love telling my story and talking. I just enjoy people, enjoy life.
That's awesome. Now, it's cool to see you're continuing an ambassador role with Amsoil. I know you guys have had a long-standing relationship. When you were driving the Pro 4, you had a big role in testing and development of oils with the race truck. Are you still doing any research and development on the Jeep side for Amsoil?
Well, we're looking at that. And anytime anybody has any thinks that there should be some improvement on any of the products, we look to all of our assets if it's on the racing side or on the Jeeping side or whatever it is, and then we figure out ways to test it and make it better. To be honest with you, though, they've done such a good job. Amsoil has done such a good job with all of their products, from the gear loop to the motor oil to the all the different kinds of ATFs, that we beat this stuff up pretty good. And the parts always seem to fail before the product does. The oil hangs in there.
Yeah, Scott. So you're obviously very involved with the sport still, you know, working alongside Amsoil. But I'm curious, how did you get involved with the sport of off-road? Is that where your racing career began?
Yeah, it is. It's actually, I was in, believe it or not, in the late 70s. Back when motorcycles had two shocks in the back, that's how old I am. Anyway, I used to race motorcycles in the deserts of Southern California, and then started helping out some teams with off-road racing in the Baja races and everything, because we were right there by Ensenada, and where that's where always the Baja 1000, Baja 500 starts, and started helping out teams there, and actually kind of got hooked helping pitting for different teams. And my brother and I decided to get a truck. He had more of the resources than I did. I just had the will to do it, and he had the resources to do it. And we end up buying an old race truck off of a lot. He financed it. It was probably the worst move we could make. You're never supposed to finance an off-road car, but it worked out great in the long run. And went and raced the Baja 500 in 1980. That was my first truck race in 1980. And believe it or not, there was about 20 some odd trucks in class 8 at the time, and most of them were factory backed. A lot of them were, and we ended up getting a fifth, which was huge for our first event, just to even finish, not alone place in the top 5. So from there on out, I was hooked, and it was just an interesting career, because started, you know, my first race that we won in the desert was actually in 1983. My first Baja 1000, I believe, was 1987, and my first championship was 1988. And then we were really gaining some steam as a privateer team. I was still working in construction at the time, and my brother and I were making all this happen with a bunch of great volunteers and great friends. And anyway, Walker Evans called me Christmas of 89, and he was a big fan of mine. And believe it or not, I wasn't much of a talker back then, and I was super shy, and I was just shocked that he would even call me. And he called me up and offered me a job, and I was just floored that he offered me the job. And he needed a driver, and basically Rob McCracken and I were racing in the same class, which was 7S at the time, and the mini truck class. And it was, and they were factory backed teams as well. And anyway, it was either Rob and I going for the win, and basically it went down to the championship that year, and he actually beat me out by a few points and that year. But Walker had told me, he says, you know what, I want to kill two birds with one stone. I need a driver, and I want to get you off Rob's back, because you and Rob are battling out. So if I hire you on, well, then you'll be teammates instead of adversaries.
Well, you said your first race was in 1980, and obviously, you know, 2019 was the year you decided to retire. Did you ever think at any point in the early years you would spend as much time as you did within the industry?
I really didn't, especially at first. When I got that first call from Walker Evans, I had taken a 2-year leave of absence from my construction job, and thought, well, this is going to be fun. I'll get this driving job for a couple of years, and then I'll go back to work in construction. And it was just amazing. You know, I've always believed, you know, when you commit to something, you have to commit 150%. And what I mean by that, I've talked to a lot of people about success, about long-term longevity in the sport or in anything you do. But as any pro athlete will tell you, for the most part, especially in your early years, you have to commit 150%, meaning that this has to be your only objective as far as in life, other than maybe making a living or taking care of your family. What I'm trying to say is you can't race and be a hunter and a fisherman and have all these different hobbies. You've got to pick one, stick with it, go all in, dive in, and learn every bit you can about it.
Fast forward to 2010. I want to know about your rivalry with Mike Jenkins. This went on all season long. At the time, what was the difference between you and Mike as racers?
Well, we it was actually Mike and Mark, both of them. But we were Mike and Mark both were up and coming racers. They both had great talent, and they both still have great talent. The thing was they had a great equipment and a lot of talent, but sometimes maybe not quite enough restraint they needed to use. And as you know, Pro 4 is very, very aggressive. And but there's a fine line of being, you know, aggressive and being to the point where you're over the top, where it's not racing anymore, and you're just making foolish moves that not only hurts you, the results of your fellow competitor, but maybe hurts the results of yourself. And that's what I was trying to, when we had the rival with Mark especially, I was trying to explain to him that, you know, like one time we were running, we were dicing for second place at Crandon, and it was getting down the last few laps. And, you know, I got alongside of him down the back straightaway out there in the woods before the big long front straightaway going into turn one. And I was trying to get by him, and I was trying to stay off him, and he kept getting on me and turning into me and getting on me. This went on for about a third of the lap, and we didn't, neither one of us crashed, but we just, he just kept getting all over me. And then, you know, obviously I got a little upset, so I started retaliating a little bit, which is never a good thing. But when it was all said and done at the end of that weekend, when tempers cooled down, I went back and I showed him on my data. I go, Mark, I says, what we did here is, I says, we're both at fault, but we end up scrubbing about four seconds off of our lap time. And there's no way neither one of us was going to catch the leader, which I'm not sure who the leader was at the time, by doing that. So if we're going to race, we need to race hard. We can lean on each other, but we just can't, you know, slow each other up. And so that's the fine line between a true veteran and somebody that is fast and aggressive and doesn't quite maybe have the depth and knowledge that a lot of the good veterans do.
You talk about going from buggies to Pro 4s and Pro 2s and, you know, everything in between. At what point in your career did you know that Pro 4 was the direction that you needed to go, not only for, you know, you talk about supporting your family, everything else, but just for yourself to say you were at the top, you were in the highest class in the world? Like, what needed to be done to get you there and why?
Well, once I, you know, when I raced Desert, I was fortunate enough to race trophy trucks when they first started out too. And that was exhilarating. And that's the top in the Desert classes and everything. And then what happened was all the television at the time, this is before social media, but all the television at the time started heading towards the short course direction. And so they found out that it was, you go and try and film the Baja 500 and you need, you know, I don't know, 30 or 40 cameras, and you need, you know, two or three helicopters at least. You need all this equipment. And then at the end of the day, whoever's filming it ends up ruining, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment because you're out in the middle of the desert. And they figured out that they could set up about seven cameras in a short course race and catch all the action, and it'd be right there in front of them. So therefore, when the TV started leaning towards short course, well, then so did the sponsors. And so at the time I was driving for Herzog Motorsports who picked up Jimmy after I left. And so Jimmy Johnson. And anyway, we looked at the whole thing, and we were racing Desert, and we had a couple of championships in the desert and stuff, real good success with them. And we said, you know what, we need to go short course racing. And so as soon as I arrived at my first short course race, and we, you know, and you got a taste of it, I started out in a Pro 2 and showed up there with a Pro 2, and we did really well right off the bat. We got second in the championship the first year, I believe. And he's just a legend in the sport, as you know. But the big thing was, is you looked at these four-wheel drives and they were so fast and so aggressive and so wild, but they would never hold up. They were constantly breaking. And so I knew right on that's where I wanted to be, because you know, when you have it in your blood and you just do this for so long, you're always shooting for the top. And right now, 2020, there's nothing more exciting, more to watch, to drive, to be involved with, to crew for, because there's a lot more moving parts, anything, than a Pro 4 is. And the Pro 4 races might not always have the highest car count, but they will always have the highest excitement rate. I mean, it they're just super exciting. And being in the driver's seat, it is just, it's all out all the time. And it's just a wonderful thing to drive. It's awesome.
Now I want to ask you, Crandon, this is a special track to you. It's, you know, a crown jewel of off-road racing. You're hitting speeds of almost 100 miles an hour in certain spots, one of the fastest ones in the Midwest. And you can't forget about turn one, the adrenaline. Is there anything in terms of desert racing that compares to the adrenaline that Crandon brings? Would you say it's the Baja for you?
Well, possibly. I mean, in the desert racing is a different animal. I mean, the desert racing, no matter if you're in a trophy truck or what classes you're in, but I mean, the faster trophy trucks those trucks will do 130, 140, across the dry lake beds and everything. And you're on your toes, because you've got to, you know, the big gotchas come up quick. And so it's pretty wild to be in one of those cars and one of those trucks. But you always, if you need to take a moment and collect your thoughts, like everybody says, sometimes we're in a conversation and it gets heated or something like that, everybody says, hey, just take a breath and collect your thoughts. In the desert racing, you can do that. And you can take a moment, and if you want to take a second or two and back out of it a tick, collect your thoughts, and then dive back in focused, you can. Short course racing in a Pro 4, absolutely you cannot. And that is what is so awesome about it, is the amount of adrenaline from start to finish. When you're sitting at that starting line, before they drop that green flag, you're looking at turn one, and it really is wild how many you're sitting there. And you're not waiting typically for the green flag to drop right away. You're sitting there, they're getting everybody staged, they're getting everybody ready to go. And as they're doing that and they start checking everybody off, you have been thinking, if you're one of the top drivers, you're seeing who's beside you on both sides, you're eyeing them up, and basically you're thinking of all the different scenarios that'll happen into turn one. When you come in there, and if this happens, this happens, if this happens, this happens. And so all these different scenarios that could happen. And then when the green flag drops, it's very rarely did any of those plans come together, because it always changes, especially in Pro 4, because you never know from the top runners to some of the good independents that we've got running for us, like Ross Hook. He's amazing with hole shots these days. And so you just never know who's going to be out front. And so you've got to deal with it when you get there and deal with the speed of the corner. I've been over the wall twice at Crandon, and neither one of them were good experiences. I mean, it was a wild time, and both times it pretty much took out the whole truck. I wasn't able to resume. So that's always a little in your mind too.
Well, you're a guy who knows what it's like to win at Crandon. You, of course, took the inaugural Amsoil Cup and running both the Pro 4 and the Pro 2, and you're the only driver to podium 5 times in a weekend. Can you describe what you have regarded as a dream weekend for you?
Well, that was it. You just described it. You know, if you can just imagine having a Pro 2 and a Pro 4 in your stall, and going out there for practice and being very quick with both of them, and then going out, and I believe then they used to run the Pro 4 race in the morning. So the morning race, you know, was the Pro 4, and then you jump into the Pro 2. And, I mean, yes, I think in the Pro 2 I got a second and a third, so I didn't win. It could have been a little bit better, but I never, my wildest dreams thought I would podium 5 times. In the Pro 4, we won both class races and the cup race, and we were on rails. It, you know, each time we got a great start. We maybe had one or two trucks to pass, but once we got in clean air, we were just setting sail. But it's just, you know, it's not always me. It's always, you know, it has to do with a whole big team event, and that starts with your sponsors. And Amsoil had came on board, and they were supporting me very well. And then also I had Kumho Tire at the time, and we had one of the best tires out there. And so you have all this culmination of different sponsors and different products, and then you have the hard work of your spotter and your crew and everything they did. And so sometimes it just all clicks, and you have these dream weekends, and that definitely was one of them.
Scott, what are your thoughts on that format of racing where the Pro 2s start out in front of the Pro 4s? Like, do you think that is the most exciting racing in short course, or do you think there's something better?
I definitely think that's very exciting. I think when we're chasing those guys down, it's pretty wild. The only thing I think that they need to go back to is they need to figure it out. The last few years, Crandon has taken and been a little bit maybe too secretive on what they're going to do with the start. And so, and what that does is it's a little nerve-wracking for not only the Pro 4 guys not knowing how big a lead the Pro 2 guys are, but it's nerve-wracking for the Pro 2s trying to figure out where the Pro 4s are going to catch them and what lap, as well as how we're going to set these trucks up. I mean, sometimes we do make some adjustments, and you know, when I won a lot of my cup races, we had a very, very high car count in both Pro 2 and Pro 4, similar to what we had this year or this last year in 2019 at Crandon. And with those high counts, you approach a cup race a little bit differently in a Pro 4. You have to make it to the end to win it. And so, therefore, you really try as your best to work with your fellow Pro 4 drivers. And back in the day, I think there was a little more cooperation than there is now. and the thing is that if the Pro 4s start battling too hard, the Pro 2s are going to just get away and run away from it. And you're never going to catch that last Pro 2. But I think in 2010, when I won it, I might have caught the last Pro 2. I think it was on the last lap, and it was they had timed it just perfectly, and it was a good deal. But it's a great format. It's great for the fans. I will be honest with you, it tears a lot of stuff up, but it's super exciting because this last cup race that I ran in 2019 here, I knew I had a great truck. I had BF Goodrich tires, which I hadn't been on BS for quite a while, and BF and Maxxis were the two premier tires in the last few years. I had great tire brands. I mean, Cooper supported me very well. Mickey Thompson supported me very well. But sometimes there's just a tire that clicks, and it's back like when I was on the Kumho days back in 2010 when I won that five podiums. Sometimes they make the little bit of difference you need. And lately, it appeared that BF and Maxxis really made a big leap in the project tires. And therefore, when I first went out and practiced on the BFs here in 2019, I was just amazed on how well we got hooked up and how fast we were. And I knew we had something for them. So that's a big part of it as well. And that's not to change subject here or whatever, but that's one thing that I'm really excited out with Championship Off-Road, what you guys are doing with the DOTs and Pro 4, because it's going to take a lot of that equation out of it. And that equation needed to get taken out years ago. I've been on both sides. I've been on the winning end of that equation where you had the best tire, and I've been on the one where I'm with a tire manufacturer that's playing catch up to a couple others, and therefore you're a second or so off just because of your tire. When you do the DOTs and the durometer rules and the different things that Champ Off-Road's going to do, I think that's going to be a huge benefit to Pro 4.
Yeah, exactly. And you take away even the performance aspect of the tires that you speak about. It's financials as well. Those tires were ridiculously priced, and now those tires are it's an even playing field.
It's very much even playing field, and it can be monitored a lot better too, because you're gonna. They'll be able to, there'll still be some funny business that goes on among the tire manufacturers here and there, but the liability of getting caught with a cheater tire, I don't think any of them want to go through that. And so it's going to be a fine line of getting that tire perfect. And then the DOT tire, obviously it's going to have to be available to the public. You're going to have to be able to buy it everywhere. And so therefore, and it's going to have durometer rules. And so, yeah, well, there'll be a few different tread pattern and a few different sidewalls here and there, but the basic construction of the tire is going to be very, very similar. And with the project tires, like you said, they were very expensive for the manufacturers, and for the ones that really had the best ones, those guys were spending huge money every year to keep developing them, and hats off to them. They did a great job. I was with BF Goodrich when they developed the first project tire way back in the day, and it was phenomenal. But we're kind of at a point, I think, in this racing series and in what we do, that we need to bring all the tire manufacturers back. And don't get me wrong, the top ones that have been winning a lot of races will still be winning a lot of races. But the thing is we'll be allowing a lot of other tire manufacturers into the sport that will have a fantastic chance as long as they get with a good team and a good driver.
Taking the tires, putting them to the side, no matter what tires you were running, what is the one win in your career that really sticks out to you?
I would probably say that the Amsoil Cup in 2010. That one, as far as short course especially, there's two of them. there's a short course one and a desert one. And the desert win was in 1993. I won the San Felipe 250 overall in a seven truck, which is an unlimited mini truck. It had a V6 in it. The suspension was pretty well unlimited, like the trophy trucks and everything. But I had to start about 80 cars back, and I had to pass all these different classes, the class one unlimiteds, the class two unlimiteds, all these different unlimited classes to get up to the front. And then I was able to win it overall. And that's the first time in history that any class seven mini truck has won an overall in a desert race. And it's never happened since. So that's on the short course side. Now on the desert side, on the short course side, It's definitely the weekend you guys alluded to where I had the five podiums and the AMSOIL Cup. And it wasn't just another cup race. It was the AMSOIL Cup. It was the inaugural. And everybody came by and was saying, boy, wouldn't it be great if the AMSOIL truck won the inaugural AMSOIL Cup? And to the point where I kind of told everybody, let's just quit talking about it because you guys are just going to jinx the heck out of me. And there's no way we're going to win this because the odds of really of that happening are pretty slim in itself, no matter if you have a good team or not. I mean, just winning that race against all these fine competitors that we had, I mean, there's always a good stacked field with Pro 4. And just thinking that you can win is one thing, but winning the AMSOIL Cup on the inaugural. So that was definitely my favorite short course win, and it was a pretty fantastic weekend to boot.
Now, Scott, I want to go back to something you had mentioned. I want to know more about this. With the AMSOIL Cup race, of course, our Pro 2s get a bit of a head start. You had mentioned that back in the day, there used to be a bit more cooperation amongst the drivers as opposed to nowadays. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that for me? What did you mean?
Well, basically what happens is it's just gotten more and more aggressive. Maybe it's not a bad thing. It's a fantastic thing for the fans. And it's great for the television audience and the live stream and for the action. But as a driver, it just changes up your strategy a lot because in the past, like I said, when we had a little bit more cooperation, you knew that, for instance, if I was running with one of the other Pro 4 drivers and I got a nose on him and we were going to slide into the gravel pit, throw it in, they might break a little early. And I won't say let me have the position, but go ahead and try and dive in and not fight door to door or fender to fender so much where we're scrubbing so much speed. And if they did get me back, I would give them a little bit maybe so we're not door to door or rubbing and scrubbing speed because we needed all that speed to catch the Pro 2s. Nowadays, every time you catch a guy, the best way to pass him, and I found this out in this last year especially because we had such a top field of Pro 4s, and unfortunately with the two qualifying races I had incidents in both qualifying races, so I had to start on the far outside and I was dead last going into turn one out of all the Pro 4s and the Pro 2s and everything, and so I had to pass each one of them as I worked my way up, and I did eventually work my way up to third before unfortunately we broke a trailing arm with about a lap and a half to go. So it was the bittersweet, but what I'm getting at is when I was passing these guys, I would just drive it even harder than I ever have into the corner, try and catch them off guard and just kind of get by them instead of trying to get beside them. Because if you get cleanly by them, you can gather it up and they're trying to get back at you and hopefully you can get clear of them before they get a piece of you.
Scott, I have one last question for you. It's clear you had a very great career. But when did you know that it was time to just call it a successful career and be done with it in short course racing?
Well, it was a culmination of a few things. The big thing was I just felt that I felt that I had lost a little edge and my trucks were still competitive. And I thought, well, maybe I'm losing a little bit of edge because I just wasn't up front quite as much as I wanted to be. And come to find out, some of that was me, I think, and I still think it is, but I think some of it was, like we talked about before, different tires that I was running and different situations. And I'd kind of thought about it quite a few years back, and my big goal was to to slowly step back, and because I do have three Pro 4s in my arsenal, and so I was going to bring a younger driver in, like Walker did with me when I, you know, he gave me that chance back in 1990, and I wanted to pass that forward. I wanted to pass that on and hopefully be able to put a driver in, but I was never able to secure a sponsor for the second truck. And so my plan was is to get a second truck, and then slowly I would step out, because I still love coaching, I love spotting, and I love being involved with the races. And so therefore that was the plan, and I worked real hard at that for quite a few years. And then about a year or two ago, with all the instability of short course with the different series and stuff, I just really came to the realization that, well, that's not going to happen right now, you know. And to be honest with you, with ISOC, I wish ISOC was able to come on, and Champ Off Road was able to come on earlier in my career, to where I think I would have been able to fulfill that dream and get somebody else in a second truck and actually feel the two truck team and slowly back out. Because I definitely feel that you guys at ISOC and Champ Off Road with Carl, because everybody else, you got Frank D'Angelo, you've got all these wonderful people, you know, Bill Savage. I know all these people personally, and I just, you have such a great team going that this thing, I know how Carl works, and he's gonna walk slowly, and he's gonna under promise and over deliver like he's always known to be. I mean, I've talked to Amsoil a lot about the Snowcross series, and that's one thing they always say about Carl. So it's fantastic to see the sport going in this direction, and to see you know, Champ Off-Road starting up, headed up by Carl and headed up by, you know, Frank and Bill Savage being the tech guy, and all these wonderful people. And I'm excited, even though I'm not in the driver's seat, I'm so excited to see what's going to happen, because I have a love and passion for this sport, and I'm never going to give it up. I just might not be driving, but I'm still going to be a big fan. I'm still going to be there helping, coaching, doing whatever I can. As a matter of fact, Amsoil talked about, you know, well, should we go to, you know, so should we display at some of these events or whatever? And we started talking about the fall race at Crandon. And I said, heck yeah. And they put it on my schedule to do a display there and everything. And I couldn't be happier, because I'm going to be able to hang out with all my old buddies, and I'm going to be able to see the sport that I love thrive. And it's going to take a few years to get it maybe really, really good. But I tell everybody that calls me and asks me, I says, give it 3 to 5 years, and you're going to see some really, really big things happen with short course off-road racing.
Thanks, Scott. We appreciate that. And you know what? We agree with you 100%, and we're going to do everything in our power to get the sport back to where it used to be and even better. And we look forward to seeing you at the races this summer and moving forward down the road.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be there. And then I'm excited to finish to do my Jeeping stuff, you know, because I've got Amsoil still on board with that, and Rusty's Off-Road, BF Goodrich. And so we're, you know, these people are still supporting me. I'm still a part of it. But it's just nice to be able to get phone calls and people to ask about, what do you think about this, or what do you think about that, as far as short course end of it. And once again, I wish you guys a lot of luck, and I'm confident that there's going to be a lot of success in Champ Off-Road.
And there you have it. We hope you enjoyed that chat with Scott Douglas. We look forward to seeing him all season long here at Champ Off-Road with his new role as a mentor and ambassador for Amsoil. Now, you can expect new episodes from us weekly on Thursdays from the Champ Off-Road podcast presented by Amsoil. So until next time, I'm going to remind you once again to head on over to Amsoil.com. Our friends over there are offering free shipping. When you spend $50 or more, all you got to do is enter promo code FREESHIPSNOWX at checkout. That's free ship. SNOX. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road podcast presented by Amsoil.